I'm Steve Lascalzo, and this is The Way. You are listening to This Is The Way podcast's discussion of Ahsoka Season 1, Episode 7. Part 7 is called Dreams and Madness. That is a reference to Baylan Skoll's speech to Shin Hati last episode on top of the Tower of Kujet on Peridia.
This is a land of dreams and madness. Children's stories come to life.
This is the penultimate episode, the episode before the finale. The journey started on August 22nd when not one but two Ahsoka episodes premiered on the same day. Every Tuesday evening since then, it's been one a week. That's Chopper, voiced by Dave Filoni, obviously run through voice filters. He's been Chopper since Chopper's debut on Rebels, and he's the creator and caretaker of the character of Ahsoka. He's also an executive producer and creative director at Lucasfilm. He and Jon Favreau got together to bring The Mandalorian to Disney Plus way back when, and since that time, we've seen two more seasons of that show, The Book of Boba Fett, Obi-Wan Kenobi, the first season of Andor, and now Ahsoka, as well as some animated series. Filoni is the creator and showrunner of the Ahsoka series. He directed the premiere and Part 5. He's also got sole writing credit on all 8 episodes of the season. Director for Part 7, Geeta Vasant Patel. She started as a writer and then got into directing in 2008. She's worked on at least 21 shows and movies and has episodes of The Mindy Project, Superstore, Dead to Me, The Great, and before Ahsoka, I might consider her biggest episode coming in Season 1 of The House of the Dragon, Episode 8's The Lord of the Tides. You and Company is responsible for the weekly end credit sequence. It symbolizes Ahsoka's trip to Peridia. It has remained unchanged since the first episode. If you're interested in a translation of the runic Dathmiri lettering on the star map, well, I went over a list in This Is The Way podcast episode 137. I will say, however, it might serve you better to see a visual representation of the translations, and that should be pretty easy to search for on YouTube. The musical piece playing during that cool You and Company end credit sequence is Kevin Kiner's end credit Ahsoka theme. That track is available to stream on most music services, including YouTube. I continue to be vexed by the copyright strikes from YouTube. There's not much more I can do except stop using that track at all, but I'm choosing not to fight these copyright strikes since I'm not currently monetizing my videos. Now listen, I aced my media law class, but that's the thing about the law. I'd have to fight it, and winning isn't worth the hassle or the money. And that's exactly what YouTube is counting on, because the artists have a lot more of that. They have a lot more resources and can afford to fight. So I'm not blaming YouTube for erring on the side of caution and obviously their own pocketbook. By the way, Volume 1 of the Ahsoka soundtrack is available now, streaming as of September 15th on most services like Amazon Music, Pandora, Spotify. Volume 2, featuring episodes 5 through 8, will come out shortly after the Season 1 finale, most likely, probably, October 6th.
The Star Wars theme may be the most recognized piece of music on the face of the Earth. So, being tasked with continuing that on is not for the faint of heart.
The runtime for Part 7 shows up as 46 minutes in parentheses on the Disney Plus show page. What if you only want to see the action and want to skip the previously on segment and the Lucasfilm Limited in Star Wars helmet sequence, and then turn off the episode when it cuts to the credits? From first shot to last, actually runs 37¼ minutes. That's from Coruscant to cut to black from Huyang hovering in the T6. Here are the actual runtimes, those runtimes from first action to cut to credits, rounded to the nearest minute for all 7 episodes released so far. 50 minutes, 37, 29, 33, 44, 41, and episode 7, 37 minutes. The description of part 7 reads, Hera must answer to the New Republic, while far away, a reunion takes place. Directors of photography are Steelberg and Tran, Eric and Kuyen teaming up like they did for Toil and Trouble, episode 2. Editing, Tan. Episodes 2 and 5 were also Roseanne Tan's to edit. Alright, it's time we talked about the cast.
What's your name, son?
I probably don't even need to talk about the main cast, but I will anyway. Ahsoka Tano is played in live action by Rosario Dawson. Natasha Lou Bordizzo plays Sabine Wren. Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays Hera Syndulla. Ray Stevenson is Balin Skoll. Ivana Sackno is Shin Hati. Diana Lee Inosanto is Morgan Elsbeth. David Tennant voices Hu Yang. Lars Mikkelsen is not just the voice, but the whole Grand Admiral Thrawn package. If your first exposure to the character was Rebels, I imagine this feels like a perfect casting. If you read the Legends novels and had a totally different persona and voice in your mind's eye, see what I did there? Then maybe Mikkelsen doesn't capture the heir to the Empire for you. Genevieve O'Reilly plays Chancellor Mon Mothma. We've previously only seen her in this series in hologram form, and she appeared, to me at least, to be a weak and ineffectual leader. On the set now, in the courtroom scene, O'Reilly does seem more commanding. Now, is that on purpose? Or is that something that only I'm seeing and experiencing here? Let me know if you disagree, please. Iman Esfandi is Ezra Bridger. Now that I've seen a bit more from him, I'm not sure I buy this aged-up version of the character from Rebels. Now, this character has gone through some stuff, and he has also been meditating on the Force alone out here. I don't know how it works that the Night Sisters can send messages, but, well, let's, for example, think about the Force ghosts that we've seen in Star Wars and how they've never talked about the Force outside their own galaxy. Maybe the Force is different depending on where you are. I'm also really glad that Iman Esfandi isn't having to play a pacifist Ezra, though that wouldn't be Iman's fault if he was written that way, right? I thought the guy did fine. But since I'm not heavily invested in Ezra as a character, I think my feelings are a bit more muted than if you talk to a huge Ezra Bridger fan. The next listing in the end credit sequence says, with Anthony Daniels. And yeah, I'm really glad things like that don't show up on IMDb early. It was a complete surprise. I saw some people saying that it seems like it's a cheap trick to pull him in, but listen, Carrie Fisher cannot walk into that room. We saw 3PO with her on the landing shuttle when she appeared in The Force Awakens, so we know he's hanging around her. He was built by her father, for crying out loud. It makes sense. As much as I love R2-D2, even if that character wasn't with Luke, it makes a lot more sense to have C-3PO deliver the message than anyone we see from the Resistance, since it hasn't yet been gathered, and it makes more sense than someone even like Carson Teva. I would love to see some shot of Leia at a desk they use from the archives, and then there's some kid playing a young Ben walking around the room, and then comes Teva or Hera, and they're pleading for her to intervene. But this is this maneuvering by Leia. This can be much better. Somehow, this is less fan servicey, and I know that sounds crazy, but it allows someone who's still with us to keep working in Star Wars. The credits do not indicate that Chris Bartlett was in the suit and that Daniels was just providing the voice. I don't know how you could tell for sure it isn't him, but I could see him having enough clout or maybe even a deal with Bartlett where he could eventually take over the role or something if he stays quiet. I just think this was Anthony Daniels doing the character.
But wait, there's more!
One more name to mention, Hayden Christensen. I wasn't sure we were going to get to see him again. I loved seeing the holo recording. I love imagining that there is a tech out there that might make it feel like the master is watching the apprentice from the past. Ahsoka says there's maybe 20 recordings she found. I really got the impression that the character of Ahsoka held those dear. She probably watched them often, maybe more than ever, after Endor. Now, I don't know that we're going to get to see any more of those recordings, and I don't know that they recorded 20 versions or 20 different kinds of scripts with Hayden so that they could pull them out and use them, you know, like they're in the vault. I don't think that's the case. But I really think this is an effective way that we can still see him without resorting to using him as a Force ghost, since we don't see him talking to Luke, which, and we don't hear that he talked to Luke, which would be, you know, I think they've already committed to not having him speak, especially since the Emperor tells Ben that he was every voice that he ever heard. So I don't think you can use it outside of something like Ahsoka, like a holocron or a recording. I think it is best they never explain where she was at the time of Endor, because I feel it would have been impossible for her not to be invested in an outcome for her master. Like, if you heard that your master might be turned to the light after years in the dark side, I just don't know how you avoid that. I don't know how she avoided Luke, Leia, and Han for all those years either. From any point of view, that would have just made Obi-Wan and Yoda liars.
Witch.
Senator Ziono is played by Nelson Lee. Back from part two, and like O'Reilly, different now in live action than in hologram form. There is a little bit of a keyboard warrior vibe, since he seems more bark than bite in this scene. Lee must be doing a good job, because he's getting everyone to hate this Ziono character. It's also interesting that we haven't seen Kaz running around. I mean, we've seen Jason. Senator Maywood is back, also from part two. I've heard it said that there are no small parts, but if there are, this would be one for Maurice J. Irvin. Captain Carson Teva. Big fan of the captain, of course. We're thankful he's a follower of ours on social media. First Officer Vic Hawkins is once again played by Nikan Robinson, and he is in the courtroom scene. Captain Enoch. Mysterious, gold-masked man. Wes Chatham is the actor.
I am that guy.
He played Amos Burton on The Expanse for 60-plus episodes. He was also Caster in The Hunger Games Mockingjay Parts 1 and 2. The Night Sisters, or Great Mothers on Peridia, are still involved in the story. The Moirai, or Fates from Greek mythology, are most often considered the daughters of Zeus and Themis, a goddess of morality, prophecy, and natural order of the universe. The Fates are Clotho, spinning the thread of a human's life, Lachesis, who measures the length, and Atropo, who cuts the thread, signifying death. Here in Star Wars, Actropaw is played by Gerald Prescott Galleon. Lachesis was Jane Edwina Seymour. And Clothal is played by the Claudia Black. Yes, Aaron from Farscape, Vala on Stargate, and she's voiced so many video games, and she's voiced a couple of Rick and Morty characters, and she was in an episode of Xena Warrior Princess, and twice in Hercules the Legendary Journeys.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
Disney Snap. Previously on Lucasfilm Limited logo, Star Wars helmet sequence, and then Coruscant, seat of the New Republic. Hera is standing before a committee, right, Padme?
I was not elected to watch my people suffer and die while you discuss this invasion in a committee.
There are lots of people you can pick out, some easier than others because they're named in the credits. Chopper is near Vic Hawkins. Lieutenant Beta is there, played again by Don Dinninger, by the way. Chancellor Mon Mothma is leading this committee, and she's flanked by Senator Maywood, and I think it might be Admiral Akbar. Senator Ziono's there. It might be the Sulistan Sion Tev, that is the mustachioed version of the alien type that is Nian Num, but that's me working off a Legends Era article on Wikipedia. None of those guys are named in the show, and none of those are really important. I mean, Xiano's named and Mon Mothma is, and Maywood is named, but he's not important. Neither is the Coruscant Guard emblem on the wall, or the Oribesh that's on the view screen on the wall. In fact, Xiono's dismissal of evidence uses the terminology of Balin's skull. There's really nothing fantastical to those report details.
This report reads like a child's fairy tale. Jedi. False Jedi. Star maps. Star whales. Distant galaxies. Honestly, are we to believe any of it?
I think this is considered gaslighting. I mean, where does this guy get off pretending none of that happened? I feel like this is Filoni telling us, without telling us, of course, that Xiono is paid off by Imperials. I mean, this whole thing is pointless. I mean, it makes all his posturing make sense if he is paid off. So really, if that wasn't Filoni's intention, he really should pretend it was.
There is no proof of any coordination between the scattered and dwindling number of Imperial forces.
What about the conflict on Mandalore?
Exactly my point. Gideon was a warlord acting on his own. There is no proof of a greater conspiracy and thus no immediate threat to this Republic.
If Thrawn returns, that will change quickly.
If.
I don't know what frightens me more. The possibility of what might happen or your unwillingness to see it.
This whole scene is really just showing us Xiono is getting outmaneuvered by Leia. That's good. Leia's smart, capable. We love her. We know her. Xiono is calling for Hera's court-martial, and Senator Organa plays this trump card to save Syndulla's position.
Identification. I do not need to show you identification.
I don't really need to play the corresponding clip from A New Hope, do I? I mean, I used the latter part of that same scene to lead into my show notes.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
What is C-3PO doing here? Like Mon Mothma asks.
Why are you here?
Honored Chancellor, with respect, I am here on behalf of Senator Leia Organa.
That's the in-universe reasoning. But the real-world answer is Carrie Fisher cannot walk through those doors.
The Honorable Senator Organa has become aware of an unfortunate situation and wishes to present this data transcript, which she hopes may resolve the matter.
So now Leia has these data transcripts, data tapes, and she's presenting them openly here. So back in Rogue One and in New Hope, she gets data tapes and surreptitiously hands them over to R2. Now, she's entrusted 1-2-3-PO. It's also weirdly reminiscent, this whole scene, of the beginning of Return of the Jedi, when a certain golden protocol droid shows up at this dais for a presentation just before a green Twi'lek finds out her fate. I constantly see people saying, just recast Leia. Why does Star Wars not want to recast anybody? I strongly disagree. Maybe for some smaller characters, but I'm going to take the CGI efforts whenever it's needed. Yeah, it's not needed here. Disney and Lucasfilm cannot be trusted anymore, and no actor or actress is going to take over for Leia as an adult. It just won't work. It won't work anymore. When I turn 75, because I'm the exact same age as Star Wars, then you can remake Star Wars and do whatever you want.
I object in the strongest terms.
Xiono kind of said it for me. I object in the strongest terms. But obviously he's speaking in-universe. He's laughably defiant here. I mean, it's also becoming increasingly transparent what his game is.
As I was about to say, the transcript shows that Senator Organa personally sanctioned General Syndulla's reconnaissance mission to Setos, being regrettably unaware that Senator Xiono had held a vote against such a mission without her.
Is Leia threatening him with censure for violating procedure? Where are those fellow senators now that voiced concerns in that hollow meeting that Hera took on Home One back in Part 3? Maywood's staying silent. Senator Rodrigo doesn't even appear to be there, nor does the Gran who didn't speak. It's Hamato Xiono on an island here.
This is preposterous. The court cannot admit evidence of this kind from a mere droid.
What?
Oh, I loved Chopper's response and Teva trying to hold him back. I just feel like this guy is doing a great job making us hate Hamato Ziono.
Yes, well, Senator Organa is willing to overlook this misstep, but asks that you address any further concerns to her directly in her role as leader of the Defense Council.
I know this is set up Filoni is trying to provide here, but maybe it's knowing what happens with the First Order and the Resistance already that makes things like this stick out like a sore thumb to me. Of course, Leia eventually has to get to the point where she leaves and forms the Resistance. I felt like it was more believable before they tried to tell that as a story. I think that's a huge problem that you get when you skip those years, which, to use the actors, you had to do, right? They told a story with a big gap, and now they're trying to dovetail those two together. It's more glaring when you realize they're having a conversation now that should have and could have happened much earlier. Others bear witness, not just Ahsoka and Hera and not just Carson Teva. It's not impossible, but the dialogue isn't crisp or special to Star Wars.
Put your personal feelings aside and don't deny you have them. How real is the threat of Thrawn's return?
We have to prepare for the worst. And hope for the best.
Yeah, it took me more than 5 minutes to get through 5 minutes of scenes. I know that. But we're going to catch back up because the next one, it's just a hollow recording of Anakin that Ahsoka now feels comfortable enough to bring out and rewatch while training. The hollow recording will hit differently now for her that she just had that encounter in the World Between Worlds, even if every moment that passes since then makes that time feel more like a dream. Ahsoka might have found some forgiveness for her master. She is a little more joyful since cheating death or returning from it.
In this war, you will face more than just droids. General Grievous, Asajj Ventress, even Count Dooku. You could face any one of them on the battlefield.
So that name, Asajj Ventress, that's Filoni once again flexing on the non-animated series watching fan. Asajj what now? Ventress was a character only seen in animation that figured prominently in the early Clone Wars action as an apprentice of Count Dooku, and she was a Night Sister of Dathomir. That's really the only connection you need to know since she's gone. Dead. She dies to save a former Jedi turned to the dark side that I've mentioned before, Quinlan Vos. I mentioned him because Ahsoka seems to have the same Force Echo power that he did. So Dooku kills Ventress with Force Lightning after he abandoned her as her master. And then she and Vos team up and try and kill him. Again, you don't need to know anything more than that. She was from Dathomir, like Maul, a dark side apprentice of Dooku, a Night Sister, and we never saw her in live action or heard about her.
It's my responsibility to prepare you. So practice these forms often. Or at least more than I do. Don't be afraid. Just remember what I taught you and trust your instincts. I know you can do this, Ahsoka.
Anakin is preparing a young Ahsoka with this recording. I don't mind one bit that it appears that he's watching her from the grave or something, because this is the kind of thing where maybe she's watched it so many times over the years, she knows what he's going to do next in the recording. Like, her training has evolved to fit into the beats that she memorized. I like that as a detail. And even when they're not intentional, if it isn't, I like this implication that there is this deep connection. Hu Yang comes in toward the end to tell her the whales are slowing down.
He was a good master.
These lessons are not philosophical. These are lightsaber training forms. She kept them in an old wooden case. With all the space and compartments available on this ship that we've seen some of them, this was like her jewelry case, like her keepsake treasure box. We see she's got a new outlook after having that encounter in the World Between Worlds. It's not something she's willing to share, though, with Hu Yang, I suppose.
I think the odds are pretty good.
No. No, in fact, they're terrible. Astronomically terrible.
Well, you should have said something.
I did, but you never...
Jedi teases droid. Not only that, but we get a corruption of the Never Tell Me the Odds line from the original trilogy, and it's not crazy to point it out. I mean, it comes close to the T6 entering this Star Whale graveyard that is like the asteroid field where we hear that odds line.
You don't have to do this to impress me.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I know if you're listening to my podcast that you know that, but I'm still going to play those clips because I like to. Filoni proves to me that my supposition is right. Dave Filoni chooses minds at the arrival point as the method of hampering the heroes. He quite easily could have had the Scion waiting in the general area, then pursuing the Purgle after they show up on a scope. Instead, because Filoni created the World Between Worlds, he knows how the intergalactic hyperspace lane works because he's worked under George Lucas. He knows all of these things intimately. It just comes out in the way he writes the scene. He chooses to have an Imperial minefield set. I feel this is something that Tony Gilroy would never do in Andor. The scene is not unwatchable. I understand that. I'm not saying that. But I can't pretend that there wasn't a better alternative. I mean, he's telling us that this is how the hyperspace tunneling works. It comes to one spot and then the other spot on the other end of the other galaxy, right? I mean, this is a tunnel. The New Republic can be waiting at the other side for when they return. That's all they have to do. They're going to come out at the same place. Oh, by the way, Ahsoka in this scene basically condones using living creatures as shields.
At least the whales are providing some cover.
You had to say something.
I was being optimistic.
So Ahsoka pilots the T6 into the graveyard of whale bones to avoid a fighter detachment, and before the scene cuts, we get an enemy pilot crashing into something when pursuing. That is just about as Star Wars as you can get. And I'd actually be surprised if we saw a space chase where that didn't happen. We then head to Peridia, where someone got the memo about changing the perspective of the hovering Chimera to make it look less like something suggestive. That's all I'll say. Listen to my last podcast to hear about that. Then we see the progress of the catacombs cargo transfer. And with so many troopers working on it, what is taking so long? I know it's needed for the show, but then don't show us what looks like a problem. I mean, have more cargo going in, or don't show so many troopers. There are tons of ways to make this make more sense. I mean, show how hard it is to get it up the stairs from the tower, from the catacombs or something like that. I don't know. There's a way to do it. Captain Enoch gives us an update to Thrawn on the minefield activation. I mean, he's giving Thrawn this update, and then we see it, and Thrawn finds out Ahsoka has arrived on the battlefield. Elsbeth presents him with Ahsoka's files from the Inquisitorial database, which is a thing, but how is it still a thing? Of all the things to keep around post-Imperial Fall, this one seems a little strange. I mean, there's not many left. I mean, it's not a major issue, but still, why does she have access to this?
Here's everything the Inquisitorial database had on her.
Her master was General Anakin Skywalker.
Yes.
He seemingly discovers Ahsoka was trained by Anakin. I think he knows Anakin is Vader from either Legends or the new novels, or maybe from what I've heard, some comic book centered around a mission that they share at Galaxy's Edge. I mean, if you could only hear my eyes rolling right now. At this, Thrawn tells Enoch, call back the fighters. He's coming up with a plan. Elsbeth, she is not on the same level as a tactician, and truthfully, she has lost most of her usefulness, which makes him entertaining her questions or her company an expression of thanks for what she's done before.
Without pursuit, we shall lose them in the debris field.
You're quite right, of course. Jedi are very good at hiding. They've been practicing that for years. And if she's anything like her master, she'll be unpredictable and quite dangerous.
He doesn't want to waste time chasing her, Ahsoka, because he knows what she, Ahsoka, is after. Sabine. Ahsoka and Huyang are meanwhile navigating the Star Whale Graveyard of Bones. There are so many of them. I do wish we'd have seen them pass by Star Whale Eggs or Roe or something. I mean, something to further signify this connection between death and destruction and birth and new life. And I know that was my prediction, but I think the wheels piecing out from the minefield means my theory is a great one, but it's not going to be used by Filoni. I mean, if only. We also get a basic copy of a line from Empire Strikes Back, Huyang and Leia.
The fighters gave up their pursuit, and I can see why. We're going to get pulverized if we stay out here much longer.
We're going to get pulverized if we stay out here much longer.
You can argue with that.
Pulverized.
Ahsoka pilots the ship into the ribcage of an absolutely massive dead Star Whale. They don't exactly play the scene out like Empire Strikes Back on that asteroid. This is kind of more a showcase of Ahsoka's new outlook. I mean, how did someone know that they were coming, right? This is something Thrawn would prepare for, so what to do now? Well, couldn't Ahsoka do what she ends up doing at the same time Huyang does what he does?
I will run a scan to see if I can locate Lady Ren.
Could have done them both at the same time, but back on Peridia, Ezra let Sabine rest. The caravan of Na'ti courage travels the surface in these pill-bug-looking mobile homes. Apparently they've talked already, Ezra and Sabine. And Ezra summarizes some of what she told him for us.
Still trying to process everything you told me. The Empire was defeated.
Battle of Endor.
The Emperor died.
That's what people say.
There's a new Republic. Zeb's training recruits, and Hera's commanding fleet. I missed everything.
It's been a while. You know, I was beginning to think we'd never find you.
How did you?
What?
Find me. You never said.
It's complicated.
Your usual level, or worse?
Worse.
Well, we could talk about something else, I guess. But you know, getting home is kind of important.
Ahsoka took me on as her apprentice.
She what? Why? I mean, congratulations. Yeah, so where is Ahsoka? Is she coming? That's complicated.
It's possible he left out Hera having Jason. And it's also possible that he was told and didn't, you know, say anything about it. Maybe Sabine was tired of something, didn't get too in-depth. But she still hasn't told him about this ticking clock of the ship leaving. She is the worst. Now, no one is unredeemable. But you do have to want to be redeemed, right? Sabine has no idea. She is awful. Now, unfortunately, Baylan and Shin have brought their new BFFs along the tracking party. We didn't get to see their meeting. We don't really need to. I found it interesting that Baylan and Shin don't call in immediately. They wait to use these new friends first as the cavalry. So they view them as expendable, maybe because they're aliens or maybe just because that's not part of their plan. I don't know. The Great Mothers, meanwhile, they're very much more useful to Thrawn than Elsbeth still is. So he's going to call them in for some help.
Great Mothers, I'm in need of your assistance.
We are at your service, my lord.
Ahsoka Tano lies hidden within the graveyard. Find her?
Yes, Grand Admiral.
The three will literally try to triangulate Ahsoka's position in space. They're supposedly using magic, and Morgan Elsbeth even joins the trio of witches in spellcasting. But do they need these orbs? Or are they just the focal points? Or did the witches of this universe rely more on tech than the witches that we see in the Prime Galaxy in animation? Because even in this show, we've seen the magic as a green flame, not as a red laser. This is not a sticking point for me. I'm just curious. You know, is it just because it looks cooler, or does Filoni have some reason behind this? Also, they can do this. Can they locate Ezra too? I mean, they seem to have little trouble reaching Ahsoka. Or is it what she is doing at the time that helps them ping her location? First, where is she? Still in the Whale Graveyard on that ship with Hu Yang, and there appear to be other spacebound creatures feeding on what's left of the whales. This is really weird. I mean, they looked and moved a little bit like space shrimp. It's not krill. They're not air shrimp. And yes, I looked up space shrimp in Wikipedia. The space debris or something else seems to be hampering the ship scanning for Sabine.
There's another way.
Do you think your bond is that strong?
Ahsoka tries reaching out to her Padawan through the Force. Obi-Wan reaches out to Luke, Luke and Leia, Luke and Vader, Leia and Ben, Ben and Rey. I mean, it's been done. But usually there's that deep connection. Well, it doesn't matter. It works. I think this is more a case of Ahsoka's power than anything Sabine does. Because first, she thinks Ahsoka's dead. She's not meditating on her. She's not open to the Force waiting for this call to come. This is just Ahsoka creeping up and whispering in her ear, basically.
Ahsoka.
When they make the connection, Ahsoka says she sees her. Sees Sabine? It cuts to a close-up of Clothau as she opens her eyes. Ahsoka sees Sabine, the witches see Ahsoka. Maybe that's how it goes. They somehow pinpoint her location, you know, triangulate. But somehow their magic is working with technology because Thrawn assumes Captain Enoch now has the coordinates. Apparently, he does. He's ordered to open fire on her location in the graveyard. They flush Ahsoka out of hiding, and Thrawn orders the squadron to re-engage. He knows she's not coming for him. I think the reason Thrawn always seems so smart, though, remember, Imperial officers were always so dumb and impatient. Because they were so dumb, the rebellion capitalized time and time again on over-pursuit, traps being sprung too soon, Ozzel coming out of hyperspace too close to Hoth. Thrawn's not like that.
Well done. We're flushed out of hiding.
Shall we prepare our defenses?
No, we're not the focus of the Jedi's attention. Tano will pursue Sabine Wren, whom we have wisely sent far from here.
The Na'ti, or No'ti, spot Shin and Baylan. It's not like they were trying to hide, though. Ezra tries redirecting the courageous caravanners, and I thought for a moment Baylan and Shin were being like wolves. You know, in Wild West movies, when the leader of the wagon train spots them and says, hey, let them be. And then you get the scene at night where the wolf comes in and you think everyone's asleep, but they've been watching and waiting for the attack. Or maybe the wolves were just waiting for them to block themselves in with water to their backs before revealing their far greater force. You know, they just keep following and following them, and then the wagon train hits the water's edge, and oh no, there's a whole pack of wolves. I don't know. Instead, it's just the most interesting man in two galaxies doing something even more interesting. He gives his last commands to Shin as her master.
Contact Thrawn. Kill Sabine Wren and Ezra Bridger. Then take your place in the coming Empire.
You won't help?
Your ambition drives you in one direction. My path lies in another. One parting lesson, Shin. Impatience for victory will guarantee defeat.
I mean, I didn't see this coming. This guy is absolutely not a Sith. I mean, but what is his deal? We still have no inkling about this power that he's seeking. Episode 8 is coming up. At this point, I thought, okay, end of the episode, we're going to see him walking into some temple. There's going to be a circle on the wall, and he's going to do something and then walk into the world between worlds, and it'll be totally different from the one that we see in the Prime Galaxy, and then we'll understand a little bit more, or he's going to talk to somebody, but no. It's just the bandits approach and aren't commanded to attack, but they they just grunt and go off. Now, the grunt reminded me of the Tuscans. Doesn't it sound a little bit like that? I don't know. Thrawn dispatches two gunships with somewhere between 14 and 20 night troopers. The bandits ride in on howlers. They have blaster rifles and these electro staffs. The Na'ti fight back with a slingshot. I mean, that's all we saw because, you know, Ezra had one in Rebels, right?
Uh-oh. That's charming. Any real weapons?
They're peaceful people.
Peaceful? Fine. You didn't mention defenseless.
They survived well enough.
And that's really it, right? Ezra has avoided the bandits and hidden. That's all. These people are not fighters, these aliens, because they don't have to be. They hide. If not in their homes, their shells. This is not pacifism by choice, but by opportunity. I would have liked, however, for them to use their pods better, or armored caravan, whatever you want to call it, you know, more offensively against the charge. They could have been better at blocking the advance from behind by moving closer together and then flanking and crushing those that come through or pass by. And yes, I know they did try it, but it would seem that if they're not going to be fighters, then that would have been a more natural skill for them to use, being able to crush things between their two caravans. It's either or for me. I mean, either show them as tanks or show them as clever and agile escapers. But we don't get that. One of the caravans ends up getting disabled with an electro staff. Ezra circles the caravan. He's not going to leave anyone behind. Ahsoka is getting closer with the T-6, but she's still being pursued by the fighters.
We cannot land while under attack. Standard Jedi mission protocol states.
Won't need to land.
Oh, not this again.
Yes, this again. Once I'm on the ground, draw the fighters away.
Yes, yes, of course. Just remember what happened last time.
You got the timing wrong?
And didn't I feel terrible?
No!
Ahsoka ends up doing the Legolas shield surf from Helm's Deep. It's on purpose. I mean, this is an homage to Lord of the Rings, isn't it? She doesn't need to do it the way she does it with the sliding down. I mean, it sure is cooler than just hopping out, I guess. And then almost immediately, she runs into Baylan. I mean, you can still see the T-6 flying away when she sees him. Now, was that on purpose?
Well, no. This is a surprise.
Didn't expect to see you again.
Disappointed?
No. However, can't allow you to interfere.
I don't have time for this.
That I know.
I'm not showing these clips because it's great writing, because didn't expect to see you here isn't an instant classic. It's not even This Is the Way or I Have Spoken. The time for mystery is just running out. Ray Stevenson will not be reprising his character, and they're not going to use old footage of him either. I mean, I'm sorry, he's gone. Ahsoka and Baylan end up clashing sabers, then the scene cuts back to Sabine and Ezra circled up.
What's the plan?
Here, do your thing.
What thing?
It's your lightsaber, take it.
You keep it.
What?
I don't need it. Besides, you've been training.
Very funny.
No, I'm serious.
Take it.
I gave it to you. It's yours now.
At least take a blaster.
No. The Force is my ally. That's all I need.
Well, I'm gonna need more than that.
You know, I think this is the first time I agree with Sabine. It's cute. Ezra thinking leaving a lightsaber out of play is okay here. Right? It's cute. Maybe it's okay that he starts out like this, but it wasn't necessary. The Force is your ally, huh? I mean, trying to quote Yoda? Great. How about use the Force and the lightsaber that, you know, Force users use? Plus, it is clear Sabine is more comfortable and more practiced with blasters, so someone should use it. I was really afraid Ezra was going to claim some sort of pacifism here. It doesn't turn out to be the case, I know. So this is just a dumb move. You know, maybe he's even trying to show off a little bit, biting off more than he can chew. That would be reasonable, and that would not be against character. The fight scene is okay. It's possible on past run-ins with the bandits that Ezra held his own just fine, so maybe he thought he didn't need it. There's nothing wrong at this point. Cutting back to Baylan and Ahsoka, this lightsaber fight, it's not as epic as the one on Cetus, but it certainly wasn't comically bad. Sabine then ends up having to pull out the lightsaber and uses it well when we get back to the bandits and Ezra, and he's using the Force as his ally, and he senses Shin's approach from behind at maybe the last possible moment. His hair gets singed by her blade. Bridger does overestimate his skill a little and gets thrown back when distracted by the oncoming troop landers. Sabine has her third matchup against Shin for a moment. Then it's back again for the conclusion of the Ahsoka and Baylan clash.
You can't defeat me.
Perhaps. I don't have to.
Skull has been so mindful up to this point, but maybe he gets a little overconfident and distracted and can't see Huyang making the pass with the T6. Ahsoka shows here she was stalling in order to get an opening to flee to her friends. Interesting, it's a tactic someone else is pretty much using this whole time on the good guys. Baylan sees Ahsoka riding away, and they give him 20 seconds of screen time just brooding. What is he thinking? Is he sad she got away? Was he on the middle of a journey somewhere and hoping he could convince Ahsoka to come with? I'm preparing myself to get absolutely no answers to those questions.
I'm fine. Fine, just stay in there and shut the door.
The night troopers arrive and start to unload. These do not seem to be zombies. They are talking in normal voices. Some of the ones that we heard when the troops were presented in the first time we saw them in episode 6, some of them were talking with that modulation that Marak had. Also, when some of them are shot with a blaster, there's no green smoke. It's possible there needed to be a bigger wound for that smoke to escape the magic, but I just think these are live troopers. None of these seem to speak with that distorted voice like Marak, and Enoch certainly does. These troopers have also had a lot of time on the shooting range. In fact, at one point, they're so accurate, it actually helps Sabine, since she gets shot square in the back on her Beskar, where if that blast is a little off, it might have hit her between the plating. Something else I noticed in this battle scene was the small probe droid that comes out from the crafts. That is the little droid drone that gives Thrawn his battle readout, which lets him command from the tower. I thought that was an excellent detail that we see included there. It's how he realizes something is missing from the battlefield.
Our sight is short on mercenary. Where's Baylan's gone?
I do wonder why he doesn't just, you know, suspect that Baylan is dead, but maybe that's because he's missing from the start of the battle. Ezra goes from overconfident a few scenes back to now desperately trying to buy some time. Now, normally, I would just roast Filoni for including a wait, don't shoot scene, but since the theme is wasting time, and that would be appropriate here, and since Shin doesn't allow him to drag on too long before reiterating her charge to fire, it doesn't end up bothering me too much. I'm guessing Ahsoka is waiting on the howler just off stage right, you know. If they were about to fire sooner, Ahsoka might have acted sooner. I mean, that's how I'm rationalizing this. The fact I feel I have to do so is pretty telling, I would say. Also, we already kind of had one of these scenes with Sabine telling Baylan to stop in episode 4 instead of just shooting him in the back. It really just gives Ahsoka a bit of a hero moment. And this is also a chance for her to show mastery over Shin.
Well, they're all back together. I hope I survived long enough to see the outcome.
Yep, Huyang is still piloting around. He must be pretty good. Either that or the fighters that are fighting him are just the worst. Ezra is still running his monk build, you know, plus two to attack when not carrying weapon or something like that. Then suddenly, oh, now it's okay to steal and use that blaster. I think this is a good decision, though, honestly. It's smarter for him to arm himself after he sees the situation change. If Sabine had offered the saber after the troopers arrived, and by that I mean if they had had that chance because the scene was written that way, I think he would have taken it. You know, she can still have this thing as her own, but I don't think Jedi are just not going to use a lightsaber because it's not theirs. But at that point, I think it would have just made more sense. And then here with the blaster, I mean, I get all of that in just 10 seconds of him, you know, fighting and using the blaster against the former Imperial troops.
What a rare sight. Almost like the Jedi of old.
I like Thrawn's compliment. He can show respect for opponent and still want to win, and we find out his real goal here wasn't wiping out his opponent's chess pieces. He was playing football and running out the clock.
Recall the gunships. Call off the aerial pursuit. These are unfortunate, but acceptable losses given the absence of Lord Baelin. In the grand scheme of things, one might even call this first match with Tarno a success.
Well, that's the kind of thing a loser says, honestly, right? But who was he keeping this plan from? Why wasn't he just honest about this from the start? What for? He's just putting some spin on this loss, which is something a good Imperial officer would absolutely have to master. You mess up with Vader, and your subordinate gets promoted, right?
You have failed me for the last time, Admiral. Captain Piet.
Yes, my lord.
Make ready to land our troops beyond their energy field, then deploy the fleet so that nothing gets off the system. You are in command now, Admiral Piet.
Thank you, Lord Vader.
I didn't need to play that. I just wanted to. This one, too.
Apology accepted, Captain Nida.
Come on, we can always use a little more old-school Vader, can't we? The cargo load process is almost complete. With most precincts reporting in, Thrawn believes it's close enough to call this election in his favor. He calls off the attack to the bewilderment of Elsbeth, who is always one step behind, because Filoni has to make Thrawn seem smarter, and he's not sure how else to do that.
I see only our enemies reunited.
Let me show you what I see. With our enemy distracted, the cargo transfer is now almost complete, which means we shall soon leave this forsaken place. Ahsoka Tano has lost the one thing she could not afford to lose today. Time. Time is very much on our side now, and I shall keep it that way.
Only one person in the heroic four realizes that Thrawn's right. And that person is kind of keeping that a secret. Shin is offered a spot in the group to make it a Fab Five.
Surrender your weapon. I can help you.
It's a long shot, right? I mean, I'm okay with the offer, and I feel good that at this point, there's a refusal. Her master basically tells her he's done teaching her, but she doesn't feel like she's done learning. So I think for a moment there, she kind of considers it. She sees the attachment all of them have, and maybe that was contrary to what Baelin was telling her the Jedi have been doing. Maybe he's been feeding her what she now thinks. Maybe those are all lies. This is a good first offer. And I don't think it has to be a final offer, because we have one more episode to go, and Shin, like Baelin, isn't all evil. But Shin, unlike Baelin, is played by a living actor. I'm sorry, that sounds so bad. They're not good guys, of course, but maybe she's got doubts as to what power really means in the universe. So she runs off. Thrawn should win. Now, I've heard leaks and rumors. I'm not going to comment on it. I'm not saying whether I think he will or won't. I'm saying he should win, and Sabine is to blame.
Ahsoka, I thought you were dead.
Oh, okay. So that pause when Ahsoka told you to destroy the star map was...
Wait, you thought she was dead?
Clearly I was wrong.
Yeah, we're well aware of that.
Guys, getting a feeling.
It should be I've got a bad feeling about this, right, Ezra? But go on.
I think I might be going home after all.
I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
Even if no one else thinks that's funny, I do. I mean, I know you're out there because I can see where the views are coming from. And it's not all my house, my parents' house, from my wife's phone. It's not always easy to take Star Wars seriously, but that's kind of what I want to do. But I still want to have fun with the shows. It's obvious I like Star Wars, but I watch other things too. When there's a great show, I can't wait to see the next episode. Like books in a series. I mean, I want to watch and love what I'm seeing or reading. There is a YouTuber out there, Bookborn. She's covering the Wheel of Time series. And she, Bookborn, has this YouTube series where she compares what's happening in the books to what is happening in the show. I did not love the Wheel of Time series, but I've been watching the show and it's just so... I'm almost hate watching it now. But I remember, I'm not a fan of the book series. This woman's YouTube video, I relate to her so much sometimes. She is having a harder and harder time as the series goes on, keeping up her interest and as a result, her positivity. She's doing a great job. But she's now at the point, I think a couple episodes back, she said she's not sure she wants to keep watching. Yes, I know. Lucasfilm is not adapting a book series with Star Wars, but they kind of are sometimes, and the changes they keep making to the universe and to the characters from animated series, The Clone Wars and Rebels, are kind of like books or adapting books. I mean, this is completely and utterly in their scope as the creators and as the owners of the IP. It just doesn't feel right. The writing isn't as good as on Andor, and I feel like most people agree with that statement, even if they like the Ahsoka show. I'm not mad at Dave Filoni. I don't hate Star Wars. If this was a 22-episode season, I'd probably be shouting from the mountaintops how much potential this show has, the possibilities for all the arcs, including Sabine's. But we've got one episode left, and the most interesting man in two galaxies is probably never going to be seen after the next episode again. What possible power can Baylan Skoll be seeking? What turn in one episode can wipe away everything we've seen in 7 episodes from Sabine? I want the show to be better. I want Star Wars to be great. I am not in a position to offer them suggestions. I am also not using my clout to mobilize an army of theorists or figuring out ways to out-explain someone, or I'm not trying to be a rock star or crush competition with clicks. I just like Star Wars and I want to tell new stories for years to come. I feel like I've got to keep making excuses to my friends who are watching these shows as casual Star Wars watchers. What did you think about the show? Well, I mean, it's good. I like it. I'm not really enjoying it that much. I mean, some of them didn't even start watching Ahsoka because they didn't like the way previous series ended up. These are real-life conversations I'm having with average TV-watching fans who like Star Wars. But they don't podcast about it or watch every bit of content. In many cases, these are just grown men who did not grow up watching Star Wars cartoons, and so the animated shows, no matter how much I like them or you like them, they're never going to connect for these people. And no one is going to tell me my friends are hateful, bigoted, intolerant because they didn't like Obi-Wan Kenobi, the series, or don't want to watch Rebels because they didn't care for the episode they saw, or because they think the Clone Wars animation and voice acting really isn't that great and it's not worth it. I know Star Wars social media makes it sound like anyone who doesn't love every little bit of content is the problem. But I'll again counter that by saying they are the real problem. They are the real problem in Star Wars.
This is the way.
This is the way. This is the way.
Okay, the finale. Part 8, October 3rd. All that's left is Rick Famuyiwa's Episode 8. What are your thoughts? Please let me know. You can send feedback or comments you know, to my email address, thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com. Yes, you can send it on Twitter and Instagram at thisisthewaypod. Facebook.com/thisisthewaypod. Our Linktree site has the links, linktr.ee/thisisthewaypod. If you want to be part of the discussion, though, you have to reach out. Thank you for joining me for the discussion on the 7th episode of Ahsoka, Dreams and Madness. Star Wars fandom feels that way sometimes to me, like a dream in madness. I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo, and this is The Way. May the Force be with you always.